Okay, we begin here on the top of Kuf Samachayim and Aleph by the two dots. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Kol Min Hagim Medina. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says in our Mishnah, everything follows the practice in the locale. V'tanakama Leilei Min Hagim Medina. Is it possible that the Tanakama disregards whatever the Min Hagim Medina is? From this you see, or you understand, that with regards to Get Mikushar and Get Pashut, that it wasn't an institution of the Chachamim which said that it must be done this way. It's a chovah. The Tosafot earlier in the parak already discussed this about how it applies to us today. But here, from this statement of the Gemara, it's clear that the practice was governed by whatever the local moors were. If they used a get mikushar, they didn't use a get mikushar. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says everything follows the minhag medina. And so now the Gemara is perplexed as to what is the position of the Tanakama in the face of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. He ignores Minhag Medina. So Amar, we have an argument of Ravashi, but you can look in the Rishbam. He says Amar Abaye, Ba'atra Dinehige Pashut, in an area where clearly the practice is to use a get Pashut. That means both by contracts and by bills of divorce. Ba'amali Avidli Pashut, and the individual requests that he make him a get Pashut. Ba'azav Avidli Mikushar, and he disregards both the Minhag Medina and his request, Kpeda. The person is Makpid on that, and therefore it is an invalid contract, or more importantly, it's an invalid get, and you can't divorce with such a get. Nehige be Mikushar, if it's a location where the practice is to use Kitin Mikusharin, Vamale Abedli Mikushar, and he tells the Sofer to make him a get Mikushar. Vazal Va'abedli Pashut, and instead he makes him a get Pashut. Again, Kpeda, he's Makpid on that, and the Sofer did not fulfill his request. So by a contract, it'll be invalid, or he can't, doesn't have to pay for it. And by a get, it'll be an invalid get, because that's not what he asked for. So that everybody agrees to. That's very straightforward. There, the Minhag Medina and his request align. And in that situation, it's clear that he's Makpid on having it that way, because that's the practice, and that's what he wants. Ki plige, the machloka between the Tanakama and Shimon Gamliel is in the following instance. Ba'atro, dinehige bepashut umikushar. Practice in this neighborhood is mixed. Some people use a get mikushar, some use a get pashut. Vamalei avidli pashut. And then he instructs the sofer to make him a get pashut. Ba'azal, vavidli mikushar. And instead of doing a get pashut, he makes a get mikushar. Mar savar kpeda, the Tanakama believes that when he instructs him to do it as a pashut, and that is one of the practices in this area, then he means that's what he wants. He wants to get pashut, and that's it. On the other hand, Mar Savar, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel believes, Mare Makom Hulo, that he's just giving him the opportunity to use a get pashut. The way that the Rishbam explains it is, Shim Torach Lo Dichtov Mikushar, if it's difficult for him as an undertaking to go ahead and write a get mikushar, yichtov pashut, he's giving him permission to do the lesser of the two. Miu, im yichtov mikushar, tvei necholei. If he wrote a mikushar, he'd be even happier. Shrei minag minina b'shneem, because minag minina is with both of them. It's obviously more expensive to write a get mikushar, because it's more difficult, and it is considered to be something of a little more skill craftsmanship. And so therefore, if you did something that was worth more or better quality, then of course he would want that. So why did he say pashut? He's saying, listen, if you do a pashut, it's okay. But of course, if you do a mikushar, then that is even better. Or what's called hitah shevach. If you make a mistake, or over here it's not necessarily a mistake, or intentionally do something that is the shevach, an improvement, is something that is better or greater in value, then we will assume the individual who made the request of you would be just as happy to get the item that's better than what he requested. So that's the view of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Over here, the Balei Tosafot would say, what's the story if he does not have any instruction? He just says, stam. He does not tell him what he wants. He's in a location, and he just says to him, make me a get, put together for me a contract. Does not specify pashut or kashur. Over here, the Balei Tosafot would say, I amalei stam, zil avidli gita, avidli mikushar, kasher. Avagav da'adra nehige pashut. From our Gemara, it makes it sound like, if he's in a location where they do a pashut, and he demands a pashut, that's when the sofer has to do or follow through with his instructions. If he doesn't say anything, he just says, do a get, then the sofer is not necessarily bound by the minhag medina, based on our Gemara. The Baal Tosafot would say that's the diuk of our Gemara, but he notes that the Gemara in Kiddushin concludes the other way around. The Gemara in Kiddushin says that if it's in a place or locale, that that is the minhag. And he says stam, he means to follow the minhag of Medina, and if he said stam there, he's makpid on the minhag of Medina. It would be problematic if he deviated. So there's a stira between the sugyot based on the diuk out of the sugyot. Our sugya says that he has to actively say what the local minhag is in order to be makpid. Gemara in Kiddushin says just the minhag of Medina itself is enough to be considered akpada. Others reconcile between the two and say our Gemara follows that which is said in the Gemara in Kiddushin. So that's the machloket that we have between Shimon Galil and the Tana Kamo. Possible to explain the machloket not just about going to Shevach, but it might be that the Tana Kamo believes that a get mikushar has problems in it. Which is that a get mikushar is more complex, but also opens up other issues in terms of the number of edim that you need. Also opens up issues in terms of the dating, as we saw yesterday, that the dating system is different. So it does open up other considerations, and maybe the Tana Kamo is arguing with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and saying that making a get mikushar is not necessarily an upgrade from a get pashut. And therefore he says it's makpada and not a mari makom, because it's not necessarily an upgrade. It might be that he's makpid because he doesn't like what get mikushar or the trappings of a get mikushar, because the complexity opens up the possibility of more chances that it's pasul, more chances that there are problems with it in court, all of those issues, and that might be the position of the Tana Kamo over here. So Amar Abaye, Shimon Gamliel, Virabi Shimon, Virabi Lazar, Kulo Svir Lehu Mare Makom Hulo. All of them subscribe to this position that Mare Makom Hulo is that it's just an indication of preference, but not a hakpada. Doesn't mean that the person wants this and nothing else. He's simply giving them an indication of his intent, indication of what he'd be satisfied with. But if you do better than that, he'd be happy to take it. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Hadamran. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is our Mishnah that we just spoke about. Rabbi Shimon Ditran, the Mishnah in Kiddushin. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Im hita l'shevach. If he deceived her or said something and the mistake was to her benefit, Harizo mikudeshet. In that case, the kiddushin are fulfilled. So for instance, if he makes a tnai, a condition in the kiddushin, the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom explains it is, he says to her, I am a Levi. Let's get married on condition that I'm a Levi. Turns out that he's not a Levi, but he's a Kohen. So that's an upgrade because he is better yichus than a Levi. He's not just a Levi, he is a Kohen. Or he says to her, let's get married on condition that I am poor. So there, maybe it's not on condition, but just an information that he's telling her, I am poor. It turns out that he's really wealthy, or that he's really rich. So the Rabbeinu Gershom says in all those cases, since it's something l'shevach, then dekevan dinitrat stalit kadeshlo b'chol duhu, since she agreed to get married with the whatever little he described himself as, whether it's a levi or as a poor person, then certainly koshekein shenitrat stalit l'shevach. But she gets much more than that, it'll be to her benefit, and of course she would accept the kiddushin. So here, the tanai, or the condition that's embedded in the kiddushin, is dependent on the woman's acceptance of the condition. And we're saying here that if the individual, the future husband, gave her an indication of some information, and then ends up improving on that, or doing better than that, of course the woman would consider that to be a fulfillment of the tanai. That's what the Rabbeinu Gershom says. The Rashbam rejects that because the Gemara in Kiddushin says it's not always true that being a Kohen is better than being a Levi or being wealthy is better than being poor. There are certain standards, there's a certain amount of effort or obligations that come with being a Kohen or a wife of a Kohen or being wife of someone who is wealthy, and she may not want that. So you can't automatically assume that that's an improvement for the woman. So therefore he brings that the Gemara in Kiddushin says that in Rabbi Shimon's position, and it's interesting that the Rabbeinu Gershom, in a sense, does not mention that, or almost ignores the fact that the Gemara in Kiddushin concludes otherwise. But here the Rashbam says it's a case where, number one, it was done by Yedei Shaliach, which helps the situation a lot, which is that she sent out an emissary to accept the Kiddushin on her behalf. So now she has to tell the emissary, the Shaliach, to accept it based on the tnai, on the condition that was there. So she gives the information to the shliach and says, listen, these were the conditions of the marriage, and you can accept it based on those conditions. So he goes out, and then he goes to accept the kiddushin. Turns out he gets something better. Now, obviously, we're not talking about yichus now or something like that, because here we're speaking about a shliach getting something physical. So the Rishbam describes it as a case where he promised that he was going to give her a silver coin. So he says, we'll get married on condition that I give you a silver coin. So she sends out the proxy, she sends out the shliach and says, go accept the kiddushin, and as part of that, he should be giving you a silver coin. He shows up and gives the shliach a gold coin. So in that case, what Rabbi Shimon says is that's a mari mokum lo. She wasn't adverse to getting a gold coin. A gold coin's worth much more than a silver coin. She just meant at minimum get a silver coin. If you get more than that, of course I'm fine with that. Of course that's good. So that's how the Gemara in Kiddushin deals with this statement of Rabbi Shimon. First of all, to say that it's done through a shliach, because otherwise if it's her herself and she accepts the Kiddushin and the money, then she's basically said, it's acceptable to me. I accept whatever's here. So therefore you do it through an emissary, and then it becomes a mari makom, which is she's giving him information about acceptance of the Kiddushin, and what Rabbi Shimon says is that information is just indicative in nature. It's not a hakpada. You don't have to get a silver coin. You can get something better. Of course, if it's worse, then she would not accept it. But if it's better, then hitad shabach arizu mikudeshet. Rabbi Lazar did tanan. Rabbi Lazar is the situation in Mishnah. Isha shamrait kabeli gitim imakom ploni. The Mishnah in Gittin, where a woman says to the shliach, go accept the get or receive the get on my behalf in that certain location. And then he goes to another location and receives the get over there. Pasul. The get is pasul. The reception of the get is not acceptable because she specified where she wanted the get to be picked up. Blazer Machshir. Blazer says it's totally fine. Mar Savark Peida. The Tanakama believes that when she said go to that specific location, that was a hakpada. She meant that location, nowhere else. As the Rashbam describes over here, is because she doesn't want to be embarrassed. She doesn't want the information to spread in another location. She specified this location for her. That was the nicest place for her to be divorced. Whether the people are friendly to her there, whether the people don't know her there, there was a reason she wanted the get to be given in that particular location. On the other hand, Mar Savar, Rabbi Lozer believes, Mare Makom Hulo. She is just giving him information, which is the following, according to the Rashbam, which is interesting. She says that you can go and pick it up in such a location. Vim Yachpotz Alechen Yoter Tavo La Bracha. She's saying, look, you have to go this far. I want you to go pick it up in this city. That's the furthest you have to go to pick up the get. If he decides to go further, that's even better if you want to go further, if you want to get it somewhere else. She's trying to ease the difficulty on the shliach. Therefore, she gives a location which is feasible or a location which is reasonable. Then the shliach goes ahead and gets it from somewhere that's even further away. She's more than happy to have that happen because she wasn't telling him, I want it specifically in this location. She was just saying, I don't need you to do more than that. That's sufficient. If you have to do more than that, then don't worry about it. So that's why he says it's a mari makom hula. That has implications in terms of what the Rashbam says, which is, if you would say that it's mari makom la, you could have said that it doesn't matter if it was closer or further away. She was just trying to give him an indication where she thinks the Baal is going to send the get. The way that the Rashbam interprets it, it means that it has to be something where he exerts more effort, or he does something beyond what she asked him. So she said, go to this location. He goes even further. That's the Shevach. And that's why it's a Mari Makom La. But if it was closer, and he had to exert less effort, according to the Rashbam, that would be a failure in the position of Rabbi Lazar. On the other hand, if you read it more simply, which is the way that I would have read it, is that she's just giving an indication where she thinks the get's going to come. If he finds it closer to here or further from here, Rabbi Lazar would say, that's a fine get. She's just trying to give an indication of location or where to find it, not an exactitude about where you must accept the get. But you see here from all of these three opinions that mare makom hulo, that when a person gives information, they're not being makpid to do this exclusively, but rather to do this, and then if you do better than that, I'd be just as happy. So in that situation, that was might have been what compelled the Rashbam to say over here by the case of Gittin, that it is an improvement. Because all these cases are what we call hita l'shevach. Over here he says, do a get pashut, and he does a get mikushar, which is an upgrade. In the case of Kiddushin, she says, accept the silver coin, and she gets a gold coin. In the case of Rabbi Lazar, by Gitin, it just names location. How do you make it an improvement? That's what the Rishbam is saying. He went further. He picked up the get much further away than she had indicated. And that's why it's an upgrade or an improvement. And that's what Abaye says, that all three of these Tanaim subscribe to this view, that in a situation where a person specifies something, they will accept something better or an improvement on that. And so now the Mishnah tells us that when it comes to a regular contract, get pashut, one aid makes it pasul, because you need two aidim to be signed on the document. One aid ruins it. By a get mikushar, by a document that's done as a mikushar, you require three aidim. If you're missing one aid, and you only have two aidim, it's also pasul. So that's what the Mishnah says. Gemara says about that, bishlama mikushar shekotav bo shnei aidim, pasul, that the fact that the Mishnah tells us that when you have a get mikushar with two aidim in it, that's pasul, itzrich. You need that. That's information that's important. Sakadat chamina, because I would have thought, hoil uba'almo kasher, hachanami kasher. That generally, a regular document, any other edut in the Torah, only requires two edim. So, get mikushar, you say, needs three edim, maybe that's just lechatchila. But bidiavad, if you have two edim, which is good anywhere else in the Torah, it would have been kasher. Kamash malan, the pasul. That's what the Mishnah teaches you, that that's not true, and it is pasul if you have two edim and not three edim. Ela pashut, shekatu bo ed achad, pshita. In the case where you're dealing with a regular contract or a get that only has one aid signed on it, then what is the chiddush of the Mishnah? Nowhere in the Torah do we find that an ed echad is sufficient in order to cause a transaction to go through, to testify to anything, to be on a get. All of that's obvious. You need two edim. So if it's an ed echad, it's pasul. The Mishnah needs to teach you that information. So Amar Abaye lo nitzricha. We need it for dafilu ed echad bichtav ve'echad ed echad bepeh. You have a situation in which one aid is signed on the document, and you have another aid that's given oral testimony to whatever transpired. So there Abaye says that the Mishnah is telling you that case it's pasul. Despite the fact that you have two edim testifying to the information, it's still pasul because only one is bichtav, and one is baal peh. How pasul it is? That's a good question. The Rashbam over here says that it's pasul from being a shtar. Pasul from being a loan that was extended in a document. Of course, if it's a get, it's a bill of divorce, it's of course going to be pasul. But in a case of a loan, so it won't have the binding effect of being a loan with a shtar, but it nevertheless will be a loan baal peh, be the equivalent. It'll be evidence of the fact that you have some sort of oral transaction over here. And so you will be subject to those rules. The rules are, number one, you have no encumbrances. You don't have a lien on the property because there's no kol to something that's done baal peh. And so you will not be able to foreclose on property that's already been purchased. Number two is, if the loveh says parati, I paid it back, he is believed. Because even in the face of edim, if he paid it back and says parati, he is believed. By a shtar, he can't say parati. So that's what the Rashbam says when we mean it's pasul over here. It does not get the tokef of a shtar, does not have the strength of a loan with the shtar, but nevertheless, it still is a loan that you have evidence to. And you will have the same standing as a milve al peh. Ameimar achsher ve'ed achad bichtav ve'ed achad baal peh. Ameimar disagrees fundamentally with Abaye that ed echad bichtav ve'ed achad baal peh is pasul. He says it is kasher. So now again for the Rashbam, kasher means it's a full-fledged documented transaction. Because the requirement of a documented transaction, or the reason that a documented transaction has impact, is because of kol, because of the publicity surrounding it. And in this instance, since you have one aid signed on it, and one aid baal peh corroborating the information, so therefore it'll have the same status as a shtar, and you will have a full-fledged loan bishtar, and for that reason, according to the Rashbam, a Maimar believes, you could collect with that from encumbered property, or a lien would extend on the property. And number two is, parati wouldn't work in that case. That's the view of the Rashbam. The Rabbeinu Gershom also learns that way, which is the milval ped domi for Abaye, and a meimar machsher the mitraf min the kuchot, says that you can even take it from the kuchot. So the Rabbeinu Gershom says something similar to Rashbam. The machloka between Abaye and a meimar, is this considered to be a milval ped, or is this considered to be a milval bishtar? They are pretty much alone in this view. The Rimigash, the Ramban, and many of the other Rishonim believe that when Abaye says pasul, it means pasul de gamre. Means that this shtar has no tokef whatsoever. Not as a shtar, milve b'shtar, not as a milve al peh. It will be evidence of nothing. You have nothing here. If the oral aid and the written aid cannot be combined, then the shtar is not evidence of anything, because it's a one aid on a shtar, which is a meaningless shtar. And therefore, when Abaye says it's pasul, it'd be pasul de gamre. A Meimar who says he's makshirit, he does not mean that it's mukshar to be a shtar, it's mukshar to be a milval peh. So they take it one step down from what the Rishbam said. The Rishbam said that Abaye thinks it's a milval peh, these Rishonim believe that it's nothing. Abaye said that it's a milve bishtar, these Rishonim believe that it's a milve al peh. So they think that when we say that it's kosher over here, it'll never reach the status of a milve bishtar. Although the Ramban does play around with the possibility of a shtar with an aid could force a shvuah. Just like an aid echad could force a shvuah. In other circumstances, maybe a shtar with an aid echad in it could also force a shvuah. The Balei Tosafot speak about, they don't necessarily mechalek between the two positions, but they do state that the aid, Baal Peh over here, has to be a specific type of aid. He says that when we're speaking about here in Myrik, Gon Sheotoshe Bechtav, Me'id al Va'a, that the one in writing, of course, is testifying about the loan, Shira'a Ota, because the fact that he signed on it means that he saw it. V'Shiba'al Peh Me'id, Shira'a Shemassar Ashtar Hazelo. The Baal Peh is not testifying about the loan. He's testifying about the fact that the shtar was given from the loveh to the malveh. She'eid chatum bo, the bahachi ay gavna lo avi motzi de minkat shnehem bichtav. So in that situation, you couldn't have a circumstance where they were both written. What the Balei Tosafot ask is, why did they come up with a case where one aid is signed on this document, the other one's baal peh? Why don't you just come up with a case where one aid is signed on this document, and one aid is signed on a different document? They both evidence alone, but they're signed on separate documents. Why doesn't the Gemara bring that as the case here instead of going to Baal Peh? So Tosfot says the scenario must be a scenario where it can't be that the two Eidim were signed on documents. So he comes up with that scenario. That's a scenario when Eid is signed on the document, and the other Eid is testifying to the fact that the document, the Misira, happened. And we paskin like Rabbi Elazar, that Eidim Misira Karte, that the Eidim that witnessed the giving of the contract of the document to the individual is what generates the effectiveness of the shtar. And so now over here, you have one person signed to the shtar, and the other one who saw the shtar being given over, they can be mitzvareif in order to create this edut. So you could then parlay that into a middle ground between the Rishbam and the other Rishonim, which is that depends on what the testimony of the other aid is. If the testimony of the other aid is the fact that there was Misira over here, then he'll agree with the Rishbam, that a Meimar will say that that is a full-fledged contract, that's a loan bishtar. And that's what he says over here, that according to a Meimar, that type of document would be considered ilka kasher, afal pi shelo chatam alav. Even though there's no second aid sign on it, ela aid achad sharei al misirato yesh shnei edim. Because there are two edim to the misira, which is what makes the shtar effective. And so for that, he will say that it's a full-fledged shtar according to a Meimar. On the other hand, if the aid testified about a loan, and not about the misira. The first aid signed on the document. The second aid testifies to the fact that there was a loan between these two parties. In that case, the Balei Tosafot will agree with the other Rishonim that all you have here is evidence of the fact that there was a loan extended. It will not be considered a loan bishtar. So the Balei Tosafot, they don't explicitly say it, but because of the way that they develop the case, they create a situation in which, in one instance, they will believe that a Meimar thinks that it is a full-fledged shtar, which is the case where the aid is testifying about the misira, and another case where if the aid just testifies about the halva'a, then we don't have a contract now, we don't have a shtar anymore, edim to a shtar, and then it'll become like a milval peh, like the other Rishonim suggests. So, in this way, Abaye solves the problem about what was the chiddush of our Mishnah. He says, the chiddush of our Mishnah, when it says, aid achad is pasul, wasn't speaking about when you just have one aid, it was speaking about a situation when you have one aid, bichtav, and one aid, baal peh. A Meimar clearly disagrees with that, and now he's going to have a problem with our Mishnah, which is Amalei Ravashi la Meimar. So Ravashi says to a Meimar, "V'ha Abaye, Mai, what are you going to do with Abaye's position over here?" Amalei, a Meimar says back to Ravashi, "Lo Shmili," says, "I never heard of what Abaye said. I never heard that Misora. Klomar, Lo Svirali. But sometimes when they say, I didn't hear about it, does that mean they really didn't hear about it? Or, in essence, I don't want to hear about it. I don't agree with that position. That's what he's saying over here, that I don't hold of what Abaye says. Ela kasha matnitin. So now for a Meimar, you have a problem in the Mishnah. What's the Chiddush in the Mishnah? Because he believes Erechad Bichtav and Erechad Baal Peh would result in a good shtar. And so now, what's the Chiddush in our Mishnah? It says Erechad is Pasul. Hakamash Malan. The Shnayim b'mikushar ke Erechad b'pashut. He's trying to draw a comparison between the case of Erechad being missing for a regular shtar to 1-8 being missing from a get mikushar. 1-8 by missing by a shtar is a psul deoraita. Mahatam psula deoraita. If you only 1-8 sign on a document, that document is invalid minatora. That means that if it's a get psul. If a woman gets married with such a document, then the children will be mamzerim because it's a get psul. Tosafot over here discusses if that's always true. There's sometimes where a single 8 signed on a get could be a good get. That's got to do with the Gemara and Gitin, whether it's got the handwriting of the sofer, the handwriting of someone else. Does that count as being 1-8? But leaving those complexities aside, when you only have 1-8 in a document, it's an invalid document, mina Torah. Av hocha nami psula deoraita. So to over here, by get mikushar, if you have 2 eidim in it, and then 1-8 is missing, the 3rd 8 is missing, it's pasul mi deoraita. Min Torah, it's considered to be invalid. Now obviously that's extremely problematic, because the get mikushar is only an institution, the Rabbanan. So if you have an institution, the Rabbanan, how could you make something pasul mi deoraita if it's only an institution, the Rabbanan? So that the, all the Mishonim address, you can see that in the Rashbam. Va'af, shnayim shemikushar itilu lav chachamim psula deoraita. He words it, you see the nuance in the Rashbam. He says not that it is pasul midoraita, but rather the Chachamim made it pasul midoraita, or as if it was pasul midoraita, and therefore im get eno migureshet im shtar milvo eno toreif mishabde. So therefore, if it's a get, you can't get divorced with it. If it is a loan document, you can't use it as a milve bishtar. It'll just be a milve alpeh. So therefore, your change in status or making pasul midoraita means that it's no longer an enforceable contract that will allow you to take it from encumbered property or have a lien on the individual or block against a claim of parati. So that's the way the Rashbam learns. The Baal Tosafot also asks the same question and say, Lav davka deoraita doesn't mean literally deoraita. To get mikushar midarabananavi, because get mikushar is only midarabanan. And then he goes on, he says, Varashbam perish. The Rashbam says that the difference between them is pasul deoraita lo gavi b'nei chori, that you are not allowed to take even from free and clear property, ve'ein nira l'rabi, and that doesn't make sense to the Ri, da'afilu k'yavi psul d'rabbanan, lo haya gavi m'bnei chori. Because if even if it was only a psul d'rabbanan, you wouldn't be able to take from the free and clear property. So the Rashbam doesn't exactly say what the Baal Tosafot say over here. The Rashbam says that it's a mishtar milvo, ain't utorek m'mishabde, can't take from encumbered property, which makes it sound like you could take from b'nei chori. On the other hand, the way that the Baal Tosafot read or had the Rashbam was that you not only could you not take from Mishubad, you also don't even take from B'nai Chari. You don't even take from free and clear property. This is not evidence of anything. This shtar. And the Baal Tosafot reject that because of the fact that even if it's Pasul Midrabanan, you're in the same position. Pasul Doraita doesn't make it any worse. Therefore, the Baal Tosafot say that it is structurally similar, which is that just like by a get, a bill of divorce, and only has 1-8 on it, the woman who gets married would be considered to have an extramarital affair. Children born of that would be mamzerim deoraita. So too, with this get mikushar, it is pasul midoraita, means that if she gets married with this get, we don't say bidiavad, it's a good marriage. We say that it's pasul midorabanan, and these are mamzerim midorabanan. So that's what it means. It has the same impact as a psul deoraita, which is that it's completely invalid. If it's completely invalid, then the marriage post this divorce would not be considered a good marriage, and the children born of that would be mamzerim. Mamzerim deoraita or mamzerim derabanan. That's all the Baal Tosafot would say is the connection between them. There are others that suggest that a get mikushar in and of itself is pasul midoraita, because you sign, the edim sign on the other side of the document, not on the front side of the document. So that's an invalid contract midoraita. So the entire item is an institution, the Rabbanan. If you don't follow the protocols of the Rabbanan and sign with 3, then you have nothing. And that's what it means, it's psula deoraita. The two edim are meaningless, and therefore it is pasul midoraita, because you didn't create something that is valid midoraita. You only created something that is valid based on the institution of the chachamim. If you fail to live up to that institution, then you have nothing. That's the way that some explain it. I would have said that what the chachamim are doing over here is something that we find in other places, which is, it is sufficient to have two edim on it. And maybe even the get mikushar would be kasher midoraita. It really is only pasul midorabanan because of the two edim that are signed on it. What the chachamim said is that if you fail to live up to the institution of the chachamim, not only is it pasul midorabanan, it's pasul midoraita. Because you didn't follow what we said, we forfeit. We're going to take away your right, even midoraita. We find such things in other places. The Pri Megadon in his introduction speaks about it. But the Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah and the Gemara Brachot say this. The Gemara there says that the Chachamim instituted that you have to say Kriyat Shema before midnight as a protective measure. What happens if midnight goes by and then you say Kriyat Shema after midnight? What's your status in terms of saying Kriyat Shema after midnight? Did the Chachamim in instituting that midnight is the cutoff, did they then forfeit your right to say Kriyat Shema after midnight? And therefore if you say after midnight, not only you're not Yotze Midorabanan, you're not even Yotze Midoraita. Or the Chachamim simply make a suggestion, which is do it by midnight. If you don't do it by midnight, you're going to fail to keep the Din D'Rabbanan, but we can't stop you from being Yotze Kriyat Shema D'Oraita. So the Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah over there suggests the possibility that they forfeited your right D'Oraita, and after midnight, you can't say Kriyat Shema period, even Midoraita. So you see that there are concepts like this where the Rabbanan, when they institute something, they institute it in such a manner that they forfeit your right Midoraita. I also have that case by Sukkah, where the Gzeira Mishum Tikra, the boards are too wide. It's a similar thing where the Gemara says that the sitting in that sukkah, even though it's Kasher Midoraita, since the Chachamim say it's Pasul and it's a Gzeira, they take away your right to be Yotze in the midst of sukkah in that case. So similarly over here, maybe that you could argue, if you believe that the two edim signed on the Get Mikushar would make it Kasher Midoraita, even though they're signed in the wrong place, and so on and so forth, then you could suggest that what they're saying here, Psula Doraita, is they're taking away your right. Even though it's a kosher document midoraita, it's only Pasul midorabanan because you're missing that extra aid, the third aid. Nevertheless, they are taking away your right even midoraita. That's a possible way to explain it, but it assumes that a get mikushar would still double or be okay doraita, even though it doesn't fulfill the normal requirements of a get pashut. Alright, Teida, I tell you that I'm right. This is what a Meimar says. A Meimar says, now, if you have one eid b'chtab, one eid b'alpeh, it's kosher. Our Mishnah, the Chiddush of Mishnah, is that it's pasul midoraita when you have two eidim instead of three in the get mikushar. Teda, and I'll prove to you I'm right. Dushalcho mitam chevraya the Rabbi Yirmiya. Because they sent from over there the friends of the Beit Midrash to Rabbi Yirmiya. Generally when we say mihocha, mihotam, we're referring to between Babel and Eretz Yisrael. Because the Rashbam notes over here, the Rabbi Yirmiya was within Eretz Yisrael. And Shalchu Mitam means they sent from Eretz Yisrael to Rabbi Yirmiya in Eretz Yisrael. Why were they sending a question to Rabbi Yirmiya? Because Chazara now, earlier on in the Masechta, Rabbi Yirmiya was kicked out of the Beit Midrash. And Daf Chav Gimel Amud Bet, where the Gemara is speaking about the birds, the dovecotes, as to whether the dove belongs to that dovecote, or it's considered to be Hefker, or does it belong to the other dovecote? Do we go after Rove? Do we have to go after Karov? Over there, the Gemara spoke about a distance of 50 amot being the limited distance by which a newborn bird would waddle. If he can't fly yet, he would only waddle up to 50 amot. Beyond 50 amot, he would not waddle. Rabbi Yirmiya asked a question over there. What happens if he has 1 foot over 50 amot? 1 foot inside of 50 amot. And the Gemara there says they threw Rabbi Yirmiya out of the Beit Midrash over that question. So there you have two opinions. Rashi over there says they threw him out because he was matriach. He asked these questions that were just too far-fetched, crazy case. Why would you ever bring that up? It's just not reality. So that's the way that Rashi learns it. The Baal Tosfot, we say, what are you talking about? The Gemara is full of questions like that. Every Mishnah, every Gemara is full of these far-fetched cases. They're always testing the limits. So he said, no, they threw him out of the Beit Midrash because that's the way that Shirim of Chachamim work. You don't ask a question, oh, it's 40 sa'a in the mikvah. What happens if it's a drop below or a drop above? Then you don't ask that. 40 sa'a is the cutoff. So if you say 50 amot is the cutoff, 50 amot is the cutoff. You don't ask if he has 1 foot here, 1 foot there. It doesn't make a difference. 50 amot is 50 amot. And you don't question the Shirim of the Chachamim. So that's the way the Baal Tosfot learn it. We mentioned one or two other possibilities when we learned the Gemara over there. But that was the nature of Rabbi Yirmiya being thrown out of the Beit Midrash.
And now they need to get, he's the Talmud Chacham, he's one of the Gdolei Ador, and they want information from him. So they send the question to Rabbi Yirmiyah. Eirecha dichtav, veirecha alpeh. Exactly our question. Mahu, what is the din? Mahu sheet starfu, can they be joined together to being a single edut? Aliba the Tanakama the Rabbi Shua ben Karcha, according to the Tanakama Rabbi Shua ben Karcha, loti bailach. It's not a question at all. More chazara here. This is a Gemara that we saw in Daf Lamed Bet Amud Aleph. There we had a machloke between the Tanakama and Rabbi Shua ben Karcha, followed by a machloke between the Tanakama and Rabbi Natan. Again, we'll bump into this in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which is that if you have a deem that witness an event, do they have to witness the event together, or can they witness the event separately? That is the machloke between the Tanakama and Rabbi Shua ben Karcha. The Tanakama over there believes that you have to witness the event simultaneously. Ad shiru shneim kechad. Until they see it simultaneously. Rabbi Shua ben Karcha says, afilu b'zeh achar zeh. Even if they don't see it simultaneously, but consecutively, then that can be mitzarev to an edut. For instance, in a case where one day the person sees the loan going down, the next day the guy admits to him, another aid, that he borrowed money from this individual. If I put those two testimonies together, I have two edim to the fact that he borrowed money from this individual. So that's what Rabbi Shua ben Karcha says, you can mitzarev to edim. There is a second machloket in the Mishnah between the Tanakama and Rabbi Natan, and that is when they come to court. Do they have to come to court together and testify together? Or can they come separately to court to testify? Tanakama believes they have to come together to court. Rabbi Natan believes they can even come one today and one tomorrow and testify and will be mitzaref their edut. So now the Gemara says, the way that we have it in our girsa, you should know there was an alternate girsa that some of the Rishonim follow, but majority of Rishonim reject this alternate girsa and follow our Gemara. I'll tell you what the alternate girsa is once we go through this. Aliba the Tanakama the Rabbi Shua ben Karcha, according to the Tanakama Rabbi Shua ben Karcha says that witnesses have to witness something simultaneously. Loti bayalach. Of course, it's no question over here. Dafilu shnayim bichtav, v'shnayim alpeh. Even if you have two edim that wrote and signed on it, or two that are oral, lo mitzarfe. They can't be joined together to a single edut because they are witnessing different events, or they are giving witness to different events. One signing on a document, the other one testifying to what transpired or what they saw. Elakiti bayalach, the question is aliba the Rabbi Shua ben Karcha. Shnayim bichtav v'shnayim alpeh, hu demitzarfeh. Shua ben Karcha says that you don't have to witness something simultaneously, even if you get separate testimonies, but about what seems to be a single event, then you can be mitzarif those testimonies and make it into one testimony. Aval eirechad bichtav v'eirechad alpeh, lo mitzarfinan. But when you have one aid, and one aid, maybe over there we don't join them together, where each one of the idiot could stand alone, then maybe we bring them together. But over here, where one aid is testifying, and one aid is testifying, maybe we can't join them together to make them into a full-fledged edut. Odoma lo shna, or maybe it makes no difference, and you can be mitzarif them. So now, Sholach lo, he responded to their question, Ani eni kidai shishalachtem li. I'm not so worthy that you sent to me. Meaning that he's being very humble and saying, I don't even know why you sent it to me, because I'm not of such great stature. Elakach dat talmidichem. This is the view of your Talmid. He's referring to himself. He's speaking to about himself in the third person. This is the view of your Talmid. Noteh sheyitztarfu. I lean towards saying that the halacha is that they should be mitztaref. So now, according to a Maimar, he says Rabbi Yirmiyah backs up my position. Echad bichtav, echad alpeh. Rabbi Yirmiyah says they should be mitztaref. So that's the girsa that we have in our Gemara. A way of humility he was responding to them. But obviously he meant that that is the halacha. But he says, your student leans towards saying, because a student can't give psak halacha, he doesn't state the psak. So over here he's acting in a way of humility, but that's what he believes, that it is sheet starfu, that they should be doing it. It's true. Other places in Shas, noteh does not mean that I paskin, but rather, I paskin, but we wouldn't say that in Beit Din, or we wouldn't darsh it in public. The Gemara gives different views as to what noteh means, when it doesn't mean a psak halacha. I don't think that's what it's saying here in the Gemara. Alright, so now, the other girsa, the alternate girsa was, Aliba the Tanakama de Rabbi Natan. According to the Tanakama of Rabbi Natan, then there's no question, because the Tanakama there says they have to come to testify and Beit Din together. Certainly here, where one of them is signed on the document, and one of them is Be'al Peh, there they can't be mitzareif, because they certainly can't come to Beit Din together to testify. On the other hand, Rabbi Natan, who says they can come even separately, then the testimony of the shtar and the testimony of the baal peh can be joined together. Because an eid that is signed on a shtar is testimony at that moment when he signs on the shtar. So then when the other eid comes to testify baal peh, that's when his testimony is accepted. So they're actually testifying at different times. One at the time he signed on the shtar, one when he comes to beit din. And so therefore these other Rishonim believe that, and the alternate Girsa in the Gemara views it as being said about the Tanakhama and Rabbi Natan. Do we accept testimony separately or not? That's the question, because Eid HaBichtav is testimony now when he signed. Baal Peh, some other later time he's bringing testimony. Can we join them together? And he'll read later on in the Gemara, they'll bring Tanakhama and Rabbi Natan, and he'll read it the other way around. He switches and says, there it's Tanakhama and Rabbi Shua ben Karcha. The other Rishonim, we're going to follow our Girsa, but just note that there was this alternate Girsa. So now Amemar says, I have strong backing for my position, and that's why I don't have to worry about what Abaye says. So Amar Lei, so Rav Ashi says back to Amemar, Anan Hochamat Dinin Allah. We learned the story of Rabbi Yirmiyah in the following manner. You brought a proof from the story of Rabbi Yirmiyah, that's because you thought the story was that way. We have a different version of the story, which is this. Shalkolei Chavraya the Rabbi Yirmiyah, that the Chevrei Abeit Midrash sent to Rabbi Yirmiyah, Shnaim Sheyudu, Achad Bebeitin Ze, Achad Bebeitin Ze. You have two people who come to testify about a case. One of the Eidim testified in this court, and one of the Eidim testified in the other court. Mao Sheyavo Beitin Eitzel Beitin Mitztarfu. Can the two Bat Eidim join together in order to bring the testimony together? Meaning that these Bat Eidim, if they now adjudicate the case together, will that be the equivalent of having two Eidim to the situation? Obviously, we're not saying that one of the Beit Dinim should come and testify before the other Beit Dinim, because then they become Edim, and not Dayanim. They literally join together to adjudicate the case, and through that, you'll have the two Edim. So now, the argument says, Alibi the Tanakhama de Rabbi Natan, not to Ibailach. According to the Tanakhama of Rabbi Natan, who says you have to have simultaneous testimony in court, or they have to come to court together, of course, over here, they didn't come to court together. Even if they came separately to the same court, we wouldn't be mitzareif. Certainly, when you have two courts, we're not going to have them be mitzareif. Ela kiti baylach alibi de Rabbi Natan. The question is, according to Rabbi Natan, b'chad beinenu de mitzareif. Maybe Rabbi Natan believes in one beit din, one can come today, one can come tomorrow, and they can mitzareif because it's the same dayanim. Aval betray beit dina lo mitzareif. But if it's two separate beit dinim, maybe over there they're not mitzareif. Odilma lo shnar, maybe it makes no difference. The shalach lo, and the Rabbi Yirmiyah responds to them, ani yeni kedai, I am not worthy, shatem shalachtem li, that you sent me the question. El kach dat talmidchem, again, in humility, he says, this is the view of your student. Notesh yitztarfu. I think I lean towards saying that they should be mitztareif. Or in essence, he's saying the loch is that they should be mitztareif over here, even though it's in two bate dinim, because according to Rabbi Natan, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be one bate, it could be even two bate dinim, you could be mitztareif, in order to create the testimony of the two edim. So in that way, Rav Ashi says, you have no proof, then a maver to your position. Because Rabbi Yirmiyah did not say what you said, Rabbi Yirmiyah said this. And in Rabbi Yirmiyah saying this, it has nothing to do with Eid Echad Bichtav and Eid Echad Baal Peh. So that would then knock away or remove the proof that Amemar brought to his position. And that's how Rav Ashi says that Abaye could be right, because Rabbi Yirmiyah doesn't necessarily argue on him. And again here, the Girsa would be flipped according to those that say that the first Memra was Tanakhama and Rabbi Natan. They would say over here it's Tanakhama and Rabbi Shua ben Karcha. Mar bar chi amar hachi shal kulei. So now we have alternate versions of what was sent to Rabbi Yirmiyah. So far we had two. We had Amemar's version, and then we had Rav Ashi's version. We're now going to have two more versions of what the question was. So, Mar Baruchi Amar Hachi Shalchulei. Shnaim Sheidu Bebeitin Zeh, V'chazru Veidu Bebeitin Zeh. You have two parties that come and testify in one Beitin. After they finish testifying there, they go in another Beitin and they testify there. Mahu Sheyavo Echad Mikol Beitin V'itztarfu. What's the din? Is it true that one judge from each Beitin can come together and adjudicate the case? Now, the way that we have it in our Gemara, they only testified before two courts. If you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he says they actually went to three courts. Shnaim she'idu bebeitin, v'chazru ve'idu bebeitin acher, v'chazru ve'idu bebeitin acher. They testify in three courts, and then, v'nishtar achad meko beitin u'beitin. And from each beitin, there's one judge that is left over. Either because the judges died, and you only have one judge left over, or they were traveling, and there's one judge left from each Beit Din. So the question is, can each Beit Din send one judge, and then the three judges together now come together and adjudicate the case. Because each of them in their own respective Beit Din accepted the testimony of the two Edim. So now they now be mitzaref together to be one Beit Din. So the question again is, Aliva de Rabbi Natan loti bailach. According to Rabbi Natan, it's not a question. Hash de Edim mitzarfinan dayanei mi bayi. According to Rabbi Natan, we allow disparate testimony of Edim to be brought together, then certainly we can bring together disparate acceptance of testimony by the judges. The way that the Rabbeinu Gershom phrases it, frames it is, Dahashte Edim delo bikiyei kulihai mitzarfe, Edim that are not such experts, or so mitayek in their testimony, over there we allow them to be joined together, Dayanei de bikiyei umuvhakim lachkor v'lidrosh, Dayanim that ask pointed questions, know what to look for, understand what they're supposed to be doing, lo koshukein de mitzarfe, certainly they should be able to be mitzarek. That's the koshukein of Rabbi Natan over here. So the question isn't according to Rabbi Natan, Otibailach, Alibin Tanakama, the Rabbi Natan. Question is according to the Tanakama of Rabbi Natan. Eidimu delo metzarfinan. Maybe the Tanakama only believes witnesses who come separately cannot be joined together. Aval Dayanim mitzarfinan. Or maybe, but Dayanim, who are, like the Beinu Gershom says, are much more midayek, and could then move from one Beit Din to another Beit Din and still keep everything intact. Maybe they would be mitzaref. Oh, domoloshna. Or maybe it makes no difference. And the other way you could phrase it is simply that the drashot of the Tanakama and Rabbi Natan and their machloket deal either with svara, logic, or krop, sukim. So if the sukim apply to edim, they don't apply to judges. Or if the logic applies to edim, then it doesn't apply to judges. So that might be the nature of the question for the Tanakama, which is this unique to edim? Or is this something that you can even apply to judges? Shalach lo, so Rabbi Yirmiyah responds, Eini kedai, she'atem shalachtem li, I'm not worthy of being the one to be have the question asked of, hakach dat talmidchem noteh, this is what I think, which is, she'itztarfu, that they should be mitztarif in this case. Ravina amar hachi shalfuli, Ravina has a fourth version of the story to Rabbi Yirmiyah, shlosha she'ashvu lekayem et ashtar, you have three judges that are sitting down to validate a shtar. We said before that if you want a shtar to be validated, they validate the signatures. You need three judges to do that. Umeit echad mehem. And one of the judges dies after they accepted the testimony and after they did this. Tzrichei nemichtav. Do when they write the document that validates the item, do they write the following language? B'motav tlata havina. There were three of us seated together. I mean, we were a Beit Din that was doing this. V'chad leitohi. And one of us is no longer here. Although, or maybe they don't have to include that language. The reason you might want to include the language is that you have the language, which is the standard language of validation, says three judges sat down to validate these signatures. Then you look at the bottom, there are only two signatures, not three signatures. So it looks like it's a lie, or that it wasn't really true, or there's some problem with it. So do you want to include language that explains why there are two signed and not three signed? That's the question. Shalachlo ani eni kedai shatem shalachtem li. I'm not worthy to be the one to have this question asked of. Elkach dat talmidchem noteh, but I lean in favor of this way. Shetzrichim lemichtav, that you do have to write. B'motav tlata avina v'chad letohi. There were three of us who started out in validating this case, but one of us is no longer here, and that'll explain why there's only two signatures to this validation. Valda eluhu the Rabbi Yirmiyah bebei midrusha. According to each version of the story, this is what allowed Rabbi Yirmiyah back into the Beit Midrash, either because they needed him, and that's shown or demonstrated here by the questions they were sending him, but more likely because he took to heart what had happened, and you see him acting in a manner that is humble and involves tremendous humility, and that already the Chachamim saw in that a sense of tshuva, or a sense of his willingness to come back to the Beit Midrash. For that reason, they brought him back. So it's interesting that in the beginning of Baba Batra he was thrown out, and only 133 daf later, he's brought back into the Beit Midrash. Alright, next Mishnah. It's a Mishnah that we bumped into before as being quoted or dealing with opinions of Rashi and the Balei Tosafot. Here, cut up bow, if the shtar has written in it, zuzin meya, 100 zuz, de'inun slain esrin, which are 20 sela. That's problematic because a sela is equal to 4 dinar. So if you really had 100 zuzim or 100 dinar over here, you would expect to find 25 sela written in the document. So the document writes 100 zuz or 100 dinar that equals 20 sela. Obviously the math is off. Ein lo el esrim. The Yad Bala Shtar is on the Tachtona. He has the burden of proof is on him because he has to, we go with the lesser of the two. And the lesser of the two over here would be 20 Sela, which is the equivalent of 80 dinarim. The way that Rashi explains it, the Rashbam quotes, he doesn't say it's Rashi, but the Rashbam says a similar thing over here. What he meant is, you can give Mea Zuzim Gruim. I can give 100 poor quality silver coins that are the equivalent of 20 Sela. That would be the equivalent of 80 regular dinarim. So that's how you can interpret it. And since that's the way you can interpret it, Yad Balashtar La Tachtona. Zuzim Mea Dinun Tlatin Sayin. So it says 100 zuz is owed over here, 100 dinar, that's equal to 30 sela. Now 30 sela times 4 is 120 dinarim, not 100 dinarim. And the maneh. He only gets 100, I mean he gets the lesser of the two. And once again here, you can interpret it that you can give 30 poor quality slaim, that would be the equivalent of 100 dinar, and so therefore we go with the lesser of the two numbers. Kesef zuzin diinun. The contract says in it, this silver zuzim, silver dinim, dinun that are, v'nimchak, and it's missing the key word, which is how much money, or what was the number of zuzim that were lent over here. Ein pachot mishtayim, you can't have less than two, it's plural, it's saying zuzim. A minimum of plurality is two, so that's a minimum, that's what he can get out of this shtar is two, he can't get more than that, but he can't get less than that. Kesef slayin dinun. Says that these are slaim, silver slaim, dinun that are, v'nimchak, and again, the number is missing, ein pachot mishtayim. No less than two, because it's in plural. Darkonot dinun, darkonot are these very large coins, we've seen them before, v'nimchak, and again, it's missing, ein pachot mishtayim, no less than two. The question of why it has to repeat three times what seemingly is the same din, the Mefashia Mishnah note over here, it's possibly because you would have thought in each of these circumstances maybe the coin is different. And certain coins you would only use in circumstances, for instance here you're talking about dinarim. So maybe by dinarim you would say it, but by bigger coins, then nobody would lend just a minimum of two, maybe there's some other size. Or maybe the coins that we're speaking about here are not the full size coins. Maybe you're talking about slaim here, two sela, maybe two sela that equals 7 dinar, not two sela that equals 8 dinar. You have other ways to interpret what's being said over here, and therefore it gives you in each of these coinages or currencies, it's saying that the same thing is true. If you have a plurality that is mentioned without a number, we assume that the number is 2. Kata bo milamala maneh. Above in the shtar it says 100 zuz. Umilamata matayim. And down below in the shtar, where it repeats it, it says 200. Milamala matayim. Or if it says 200 at the top of the shtar, olamata maneh, and in the bottom of the shtar, lower down in the shtar, it says 100, kol achleich achara tachton. Everything goes after the latter statement in the shtar. The one down below, as the Rashbam points out over here, just as long as it's not in the last line. Because remember, we don't learn anything from the last line of a contract, so it just can't be in the last line of the contract. But the repetition below of the actual transaction, this is the kinyan aminei, which involves the kinyan itself being carried out, that is the binding number, and we will default to that number. In the cases above where they were written juxtaposed to each other, then we will reinterpret to be the lower of the two. Here where they're written separately, we will say that the latter number in the shtar governs for different possibilities or different reasons, but it seems to be that that part of the shtar had more tokef to it, or they were more careful of what was written in that part of the shtar. Imkein, lama kotvim et elyon. If the lower one is binding, then why write the first number at all? Because if the lower number is missing one letter, one number from it, you'll learn from the upper number. So it's a way to have the verification of what's written below. If there's a contradiction or a disparity between them, then the lower one will govern. But in a case where you want to identify what the lower one says and the upper one doesn't disagree, it simply can fill in the information. That we will take. Now Gemara says, Tan Rabbanan, in all likelihood I would leave out the word Amar here, that's what the Bach says, Kesef. If the Shtar says Kesef, Ein Pachot Midinar Kesef. Silver coin means the minimum is a silver dinar or a silver zuz. That's what's meant. When somebody lends Kesef, or they say you're obligated Kesef, it means a dinar or a zuz. Kesef Dinarim. If you use the language of Kesef Dinarim, or Vidinarim Kesef, then, ein pachot mishnei dinarim kesef. Then it means no less than two. You have a plurality, plus you have the word kesef and dinarim together, that means a minimum of 2 dinarim kesef or 2 zuzim kesef. Kesef bid dinarim. If you say I want kesef in dinarim, ein pachot mishnei dinarim dahav kesef. Then it means no less than 2 gold dinarim, which is then paid out in silver. So what it's saying is kesef bid dinarim means that kesef and dinarim are no longer synonymous. In the previous statement, we said kesef dinarim means silver coins and just a minimum of 2. Because that means that you're talking about dinari kesef. Here what he separates between the two and says kesef in dinarim, dinarim are then referencing to something other than dinari kesef. And that is dinari zahav. So what it's saying is that dinarim is a minimum of 2. So you have to give a minimum of 2 gold coins, but you don't actually have to give the gold coins. You have to give the equivalent in dinari kesef of what 2 gold coins would be worth. So that's over the explanation of that language. And generally the Gemara speaks of a conversion rate of 24 or 25 to 1 between dinari kesef and dinari zahav. And the Rabbeinu Tam in each of those locations in Shas notes that in our day the number is closer to 12 times or 12 and a half times the conversion rate between gold and silver. And therefore he says that it must have been that the dinari zahav were twice as thick as the dinari kesef. Therefore it ended up being that the conversion rate is really 12 to 1, doubled because of the fact of the thickness of the gold coins was doubled at the thickness of the silver coins. Amamar. So now the Gemara goes back to understand what we just saw in the Braita. Kesef, ein pachot mi dinar kesef. He says silver, he means a silver coin, a dinar kesef. Ve'ema naskva. Who says that it's a coin? He just said silver. Maybe it's just the metallic silver that he wants, a block of silver or some sort of silver per ingot, not a coined or minted silver. How do you know that's the case? Now here the Bali does both deal with the fact that generally naskha is more valuable than a currency or than a coin. So why is the Gemara asking? Gemara here seems to say that the naskha is worth less. And that's why you want to indicate that it's naskha and not kesef. So he says over here it must be that the situation or the story here is that the naskha was of a lower quality. Whether it's a lower quality because it was worn down or lower quality because of the mix of metals in it, and therefore it was worth less than the coin. So Amar Rabbi Elazar, Dichtim Bei Matbeya. It's not a problem because it says coin in it. It says Matbeya Kesef. So we know that it's not just silver. It means a silver coin. Veima Prite. Maybe it should be Pritim. Now the word Pruta or Pritim can be used in different ways. Sometimes Pruta means a coin that is Nechoshet, that is made out of copper, and it's a very small coin. That's what the Mishnah in Kedushin tells us. It's a very small coin that's used. So why don't you say that it's a copper coin? Problem with that is he said silver. So why would you say prite? It must be what the Gemara is saying here. Prite, or the throat in modern Hebrew, means to break it down to smaller components. So prite just means a smaller silver coin than a dinar. So the Gemara says, why don't you assume that that's what he meant by kesef? Amra Papa Ba'atra Tlosage Prite de Kaspa. It's a city where they don't accept any coinage below the dinar. The dinar is the smallest silver denomination, and therefore it would not be in Prite because Prite is not taken. Prite is not the going currency in this location. And since that's the case, when he says Matbea Kesef, that must be referring to the smallest Matbea Kesef, which is a dinar. Tanabanan Dahav. Now here again, another breita, but now it's doing it with gold instead of silver. If he says gold, ein pachot mi dinar zahav, he has to give no less than 1 gold dinar. Dahav dinarim, or dinarim dahav, he says that it's gold dinarim, or dinarim of gold, ein pachot mi shnei dinari zahav. He has to give a minimum of 2 dinarim of gold. Dahav bidinarim, it's like similar, but just the opposite to the case we saw before by kesef, which says it's gold in dinarim. Ein pachot mishnei dinarim kesef. You have to give him a minimum of 2 dinari kesef, but bidahav, in gold. So it's just the opposite of the case before. When he said kesef bidinarim, he meant that you have to give a minimum of 2 gold coins, but you pay it in silver coins. And here is the opposite. Dahav bidinarim, which means that dinarim are distinct from the gold. That means that you have to take 2 silver coins and then give dinari zahav that equate to 2 silver coins, which over here wouldn't even be a whole coin. It would be obviously a fraction of a gold coin. Amamar, Dahav, so now Gemara goes back and asks a similar question as it did by the Braita by silver, which is that when you say gold, ein pachot mi dinar zahav, no less than one dinar zahav. Ein manascho, so Gemara asks the same question asked before, who says that it is gold in currency, maybe it's just gold in a gold block. Amar Rabbi Elazar, dichtav matbeya, dichtav, dekatav matbeya. Contract includes the word matbeya, so we know for sure that it's currency or a coin, and not gold itself. Ve'ema prite. So let us say that again, that it's a smaller coin. During the same discussion that I had before, we're speaking about gold coins that are of a smaller value than the gold dinar. Prite, the dehava, lo avde inche. Gemara says here, not like it said before, which is, in some cities they have smaller coinage or smaller currency than a dinar or kesef. So it happens to be that this contract is in a place where they don't have it, or they don't have a smaller coinage. Over here, the Gemara makes a definitive statement that the dinar zahav was the smallest coin in gold, period. Nobody makes gold coins smaller than that. The idea being that gold was a mechanism of stored value. You're trying to consolidate silver or other coinage onto zahav. The only way you would do that is if the zahav is a large enough coin whereby you could put a large number of silver coins and exchange them onto the zahav. If you have small gold coins, of what value is that? Because you can't consolidate other items onto the gold despite the fact that it is worth more than the silver. And therefore, we would not assume when he says zahav meant a gold block or that he meant gold coin other than a dinar zahav. Zahav in dinarim, the Braita says if you have gold in dinarim, in pachot mishnei dinarim kesef zahav, then you look at the value of two dinari kesef and you pay it off in gold. Ve'ema zahava pricha, maybe he's saying zahav doesn't mean the coinage, but zahav means just zahav, gold, that's equivalent to two dinari zahav. You can see that in the parentheses over here. Kaspa nascha betray dinare kaspa kamar. So similarly over here, zahav pricha would be the equivalent of kesef nascha, which means this is a block of silver or unminted silver. Similarly over here, we're talking about gold, which is not formed into or minted into a coin. So maybe over there when he says zahav bidinarim, he's not saying that zahav as opposed to dinarim, which would imply that the dinarim are kesef, but he's saying zahav versus dinarei zahav. Ve'ema da'ava pricha betray dinarei da'ava kamar. Maybe that's what he meant. That the gold that he wants is gold block or gold shavings or maybe lower quality coins that are equivalent to shnei dinarei zahav. They're equivalent to two dinarei zahav. Why don't we interpret it that way? Amrabaye yad balashtar ala tachtona. That's because the burden of proof is always on the balashtar. And therefore, we're going to assume the least. And the assumption here of the least is to say the word dinarim is referring to kesef and not to zahav. And we'll say that what he meant was, I'll pay you in gold coins the equivalent of two dinarei kesef. Since that is a viable interpretation of the language, that's the interpretation we're going to go with because it's the least value out of all those interpretations. And since yad balashtar tachtona, since the one holding the shtar, the burden of proof is upon him, we will assume the least unless he can prove otherwise. And then here the Gemara has a repeat of this question with regards to the kesef. You can see here in the Ot Bet that the Marshal takes all of this out because it doesn't necessarily teach us anything new. The same question that we had by the Zahav, they just repeat that same questioning with kesef bid dinarim with regards to kesef. Okay, we're going to stop here, 7 lines down on the top of Kuf Samech Vav, Amud Aleph.